when did you formally become executive director?
In June 2020. Yeah.
Oh, so in the midst of the pandemic.
Yeah, and yeah. So in the, yes, yes. Oh dear, right in the midst of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Which was very, I mean, because that time people are working from home.
So you first held fort a little?
I held fort a little. Yeah, from January 2020 till June 2020.
Again, in the midst of, so pandemic period, your formalizing of the leadership, the executive leadership role is within this.
Yes, but even period. during the acting, the pandemic came in, when was that, March, around March 16, 17. Yeah. So I just done 2 months of acting.
Yeah.
So just learning to interact with staff in my new role, and then all of a sudden, close office, make decisions, because now Corona comes, you have to make quick decisions. I remember we had to make really quick decisions, and then so you close the office, people are working from home. But then now, how is that work? We had never worked, I mean, I think at BBC, the only place I'd had an experience of working from home was at BBC Media Action. In TI, we'd never, we pride ourselves in being a flexible environment, but working from home was not so common. We didn't have even a policy on how do you work from home, who works from home. You know, we have a flexi time policy, but not really how, you know, in terms of working from home. So we've never done this work from home thing. But now you have to close office. Then what happens to all these meetings, activities you had planned? 2020 was supposed to be such a great big year. And then for me also, because at that point I'm acting, of course I also want to get the substantive role. You know, I also want to get the substantive role. So there are things also I have in my own little vision, my little strategy, things I want to do. You know, they always say when you get into these positions, what are those top things you'll do in your 100 days? So I'm not even past my 100 days. And I have things I want to do because I also want to show that, hey, I can actually do this job full time. And then Corona happens. So we have to quickly regroup you know, just discuss how do we work from home? You know, what are the protocols? How do we coordinate? How do we continue our work in a remote environment? You know, we have cancelled activities, but you know, again, we are donor funded. Those contracts, grants have limits, they have timelines. You know, they will have to close at some point. Will we have to return the money? Some of those donors were like, okay, you know, we can't give you extension of time. We sought extensions for some of the projects. We had to quickly think, what do we do on this? What do we do on this? Seek extensions, continue. If we are to continue, do you have platforms, remote working platforms? Do our stakeholders, especially for some of the work we do, is machinani. You know, it's regional work, outreach work. You know, people there don't have access to Zoom and all these Teams and all these other platforms. How do you continue to engage with them? So all these decisions of how do we then navigate and transition and continue to work even as we face this pandemic? Because I think after 1 or 2 months, we realize this thing is not going anywhere. First, we thought, okay, it's just 1 week, then it will go. 1 week becomes a month. A month becomes two. 2 months becomes 6 months. It's not going. So, what do you do? You have to continue. So, we had to come up quickly with policies and protocols of how we work, how we report, how we coordinate, how we plan our work.
How you retain staff.
Yes, retain staff again. There's also the threats in terms of fundraising, that then because some donors now are shifting focus. Now it's all about, you know, the COVID-19 mitigation, channeling resources to the health sector. So, you know, and but also for us, we, again, they tell you sometimes, you know, a pessimist will see the challenges, but, you know, an optimist will see the opportunities, even with some very grave challenges like COVID. So we actually started thinking, what were the opportunities for us? Yes, we are facing a pandemic. People are losing lives. People are losing their livelihoods. People are falling sick. But again, in everything, there's always, what's that thing that we can still do during this time? And so for us, we started work on tracking the COVID-19 funds. From about like the second, third week, we started now saying, okay, how do we track? We can't go out to the field. We can't do social audits. We usually do go to offices, get information. People are not in the offices. So we said, let's have an online tracker. So we had what we used to have. We have an Action for Transparency application, an app, which we normally would use to track resources in the education, budgets and expenditure in the education and health sector in Nairobi, which we were using for that work. And then we had scaled it up to other counties in 2019.
Mm.
So we decided, let's use this, let's remodel this to actually track the COVID-19 funds, and you know, the whole furore that was that happened. You know, once we realized that some funds had been, you know, misappropriated. About, we're talking about 8 billion, which couldn't because of the botched procurements. Because of the botched procurement. So we started talking about that issue, that how do we track funds. So we started tracking. Money was being contributed. People, there was a COVID-19 fund that had been set up. Government was reallocating budgets both at the county level and the national level. Donors were, you know, bringing committing money, so we're tracking how much money is coming in, but where is it of course where is it being spent. Of course, the information on expenditure is always difficult in Kenya. I always say trying to get information in Kenya is like trying to pull teeth. It's very hard to come by, and information is best served cold here. By the time you get information, especially on financial governance related information, you'll really ask for it. So we started asking, writing letters to institutions, tell us how you spent this money, you're looking for this information. Nothing was forthcoming. Nothing. So we started now the advocacy bit. Just bringing together civil society organizations to speak about.
This is citizen-led advocacy.
I mean, we're basically like we initiated just coming together with other organizations, other governance and human rights organizations. And even at some point, the medical, like the Kenya Medical Association, the Kenya Union of Clinical Officers, the Nurses Union, the Nurses Association as well, just to start asking questions on where is this money going? Can you tell us how this money has been used? And also starting to advocate for certain measures to be put in place in terms of open procurement, open contracting in the health sector. Because I think the health sector has always had challenges in this country. You know, many scandals which have not even been resolved. You know, the Mafia House scandal, those issues around the Global Fund use. And there are many others, you know, that have not been resolved up to now, the managed equipment services scandal as well. So on the back of this scandal, now there's COVID. And of course, now we get wind that at some point, there were botched procurements. And we had been asking, you know, that even for procurement, in terms of just being proactive, let us have protocols and regulations around emergency procurement, you know. How do you do it? Because we had not foreseen the pandemic. And we appreciate that, yes, we're in a pandemic, things have to be done pretty fast. You know, people are, it's a matter of life and death. And you need life-saving, you need life-saving resources that have to be procured pretty quickly. But then even with all that, do you throw accountability out of the window and just procure aimlessly? So we're like, where are the emergency regulations? You know, let's have them so that we know how accounting officers are guided in terms of how they will procure. Where is a market price index? We need a market price index. This is a public procurement regulatory authority supposed to be doing issuing a regular market price index, showing the prices of items that are regularly procured in government, so that they don't pass the ceiling. But then there's no market price index for even those common goods that were, and goods that were being sought by medical facilities at that point. You know, what was the market price for the ventilators, market price for masks, you know, sanitizers, all these things that we needed, the PPEs.
Right.
And you now saw the story that came out that these things were being procured at very high, you know, inflated prices. And even up to now, some of those things are still at the KEMSA warehouse, and we've lost them. They lost money. We spent money on it, but they can't, you know, give them to the counties because the counties can't afford to buy them. So there are all these questions, and we try to agenda set. Then let's have these guidelines on procurement. Let's ensure that oversight agencies, you know, the likes of the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission, the PPRE, responsible for procurement, Parliament, these are the things they need to be doing right now. And this is the level of involvement, even as we have this National Emergency Response Committee for COVID-19. These oversight institutions need to be there. They're auditor generals of what is their role in this, and how can they need to be involved? Instead of pushing for those things, some things I think the president later on came in August 2020 and gave some measures in terms of procurement, publication of information, which we had been asking, that all this information needs to be published so people are able to track, get information of even who is owning these companies. You know, because the whole thing, a suspicion that there's a lot of conflict of interest, that government was basically trading with government. You know, it's public officers who are owning some of these companies, or very well-connected politicians who are owning these companies, which were being given contracts to supply the COVID-19 and the materials, the PPEs, and so on. And I mean, right now, I think that case has not been resolved yet. We're still pushing for it to be for prosecution.
Yeah,
the investigation has taken quite a bit of time, more than 2 years, but we still hope that Kenyans get justice, because it's sad that resources were lost, even at a time when Kenyans were literally on their knees, people on their deathbeds. So for us, that became an agenda. You know, fighting, ensuring that COVID-19 resources are ring-fenced and well-used. So, yeah, so despite all this now having to shut, you know, people having to work from home, but we still had to continue. You know, the work, in fact, I told my colleagues that even as we go home, remember that this is the time now when we need to be most vigilant, especially in a time of crisis like this. And that is exactly what happened. So we knew that we had to be vigilant. We knew that we had to continue being innovative and being alert on what was happening and reacting, and I mean, and agenda setting.
You kept the entire team?
We kept most of the team. Most of the team was still there, because we had continuing grants. I think what we've tried to do at Transparency International is have various projects running. So we have various programs, we have various projects within those programs, and supported by different the different donors. So some institutional donors, some foundations, and so on. We also tried to raise our own resources as well. We lost a number of people, of course, because I mean, unfortunately, some projects came to an end and were unable to renew them, because again, donors or some of these donors had had their own priorities. But really, we retained most of the team. We really, that was really central, just to ensure that you know, even at that, even when we resume, when things go back to normal, which now we know, and even in that new normal that we kept talking about, we still have, you know, people who people are still there to do the work. So we really, of course, that issue around sustainability. I mean, as a head of an institution, of course, the issue around sustainability, resource mobilization, is what will keep you up at night.
Yeah, and it does, eh?
Well, I don't know that you can see my white hairs, but all these white hairs have all been gained in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So it keeps you up awake, because you're like, you're dealing with people's lives.
Yeah.
You're dealing with people's livelihoods. You know, you have staff.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the one, you know, in your tenure, you know, you don't want the organization to fall in your tenure. You're here holding the organization. And as much as, yes, you have the staff supporting you, and you have the board giving you oversight and guidance and ensuring that there's accountability. But then you see you're the one who has been charged. You end up on a kazi. The board is not even paid. Our board personally. Yeah. I mean, it's not remunerated. They're not personally. They're not remunerated. They don't receive a shilling. So they also have their own work. They have their own work, but they're giving their time. So they will give you the oversight. They'll give you the advice and everything. But it's you're the one who's paid there full time. You know, to hold that institution, hold that baby together. So. Yes, you get the support, but you're the one held accountable for years. Mtoto akianguka. It's on you. So you also have to ensure that, yes, there are people who have come and gone, and TI was formed in 1999. So this year we're turning 23 years. So in those 23 years, before me, 21 years, there are people who worked so hard to keep that organization. After that, do you want the baby to fall?
Exactly.
To fall in your hands?
And yet it's not just... It is on you, but it's also not just all on you, because the factors surrounding this season are not just things that are, there are things that are outside your control as well.
Yes.
You know, the COVID situation, for instance, is one of those that's not in your situation. I mean, in your control. However, you know, the pain points are real.
The pain points are real, and they're affecting people, and these are people with families, and also you know, and also people are also relying on Transparency International Kenya as the premier anti-corruption institution. To champion for issues around transparency at that very critical time. Those resources, every single shilling must count. So, you know, there's that expectation out there. What are you guys doing about this? You know? But there's also, you're also trying to ensure that even despite these challenges, those projects, those resources that you already have for other projects that have been affected by corona continue.
Yeah.
You know?
So you speak about resourcing is a major thing that keeps you up at night.
Yes.
As the head of the organization, and you know, I've spoken with many other leaders who, you know, say the same. What other thing, you know, is crucial as a head of organization? Do you think a lot about for you in your case for an organization like TI?